Well, good evening. So carrying on with this cultivating loving kindness by training the mind, we've gotten to point two, it's helpful to look at this to understand how this is put together. It goes by points, and then under each point are a number of slogans. So each set of slogans is relating to the point, and each of the points is about one of the paramitas. So the first one was about generosity, the second one was about generosity, and the first one was about ethics, being aware of the preciousness of human life, knowing that death comes to everyone. Remember, whatever you do has a result, whether it's good or bad. And that self-importance creates suffering for oneself and others. So that's the very first set. And that's the also the set that is preliminary, and that is the absolute bodhicitta. So in Buddhism, we often talk about the absolute and the relative. And the absolute is very hard to characterize. The relative, we know, we can... No, this is the relative. This is it. This is us. This is things. But the absolute is the wholeness of everything, the untalkaboutable that we experience but we cannot name, that we feel deeply, but which... can't be pinned down, cannot be named. So the second point is training in first an absolute bodhicitta, which is noticing unborn awareness, self-liberation, resting in the nature of alaya, resting in the truth. Regarding all dharmas as dreams. So it's a way of trying to talk about the truth without actually reaching it, but pointing to our deepest understanding, you could say, of how things are. And then there's relative bodhicitta, which comes right after it, which is how to act and enact and be acted as bodhicitta itself, as loving kindness itself, as enlightenment itself. And that's when this sending and taking practice comes in. That's when it's real. No longer an idea or an ideal or an untalkaboutableness, but the actuality of living our life and acknowledging our life, the good parts and the bad parts, the hard parts and the suffering that we endure and that all beings endure. Then it gets real. no longer an idea, no longer a beyondness, but a right here now-ness. So our assignment was to go to our life and see what this taking and sending is like, what it is to take in the suffering of others and express loving kindness from our own heart to others. And start out with doing it to ourselves. Take in our own suffering and express kindness and understanding to our own self. So as we say, if we can't do it for ourselves, we really can't do it for anybody else. It doesn't work. The point of this relative bodhicitta is, as Shogyam says, to carry everything to the path. Whatever is happening, whatever we feel, whatever dreams or ideas or events, adventures, disasters, whatever happens, carry it to the path. Don't reject anything. So therefore, under the second point, under the relative bodhicitta, there's the act of sending and taking itself, and then the three objects, the things that we experience, and the greed, hate, and delusion that we cook up as our reaction to what we experience, and then the roots of our goodness, which is never gone. And that gives us this understanding, this knowledge of the goodness in spite of those greed, hatred, and delusion that are our kind of foolishness, our ignorance, that they allow us to use these slogans. Those are our actions. Those are how we enact this loving kindness practice. So the tenth one is to begin Tonglen on ourself. So I wonder what you have to say about that. Does everybody have a copy of the list? Is this, you have one, Jorge? Okay, is that helpful now? Why don't you just take one? So the homework was this main practice training in bodhicitta, the absolute and the relative bodhicitta. And then after this are the different slogans that help us to carry everything to the path. And I'll talk about those in a bit, but I'd like to hear especially what you all have experienced about this week. or what you're experiencing about it now.
And after that visit, you know, I listened as best. I listened, of course, and made my suggestions and referrals, but still I was feeling that weight after the visit. Well, I guess I need to breathe out loving kindness and I don't remember what I did next. Maybe I went and sat for a while. Slowly that heaviness lifted. I'm very lucky. I just don't have the nature to remain down. Lots of things cheer me up. Listening to music cheers me up. Going for a walk cheers me up. So I'm really fortunate that way. But I know there's people that have trouble keeping themselves looking at the bright side, being grateful. They just go into a funk and that's where they stay. I guess if you were that type of person, you wouldn't be listening to neighbors with problems. You would avoid people that were struggling.
If you're struggling yourself. But the point of this is that you do. That you do, in fact, meet the suffering of others.
Well, yes, we do, but a lot of people wear blinders in the form of
yes, glasses. Yes. Well, that's why this is a training. This is a training in another way. A training in developing compassion. And the basis of it is recognizing that in spite of the suffering, that there is something else going on in oneself and in others. So the main thing is the importance of being willing to take on a practice like this, being willing to take on the suffering of others. And discover the actual benefit to oneself as well as to others. In fact, to the whole world. If we're able to. It's like my friend Charlie's experience, which I've told here a couple of times, I know, when he was very grumpy and stopped for a cup of coffee on the way to Sesshin. And the waitress was such an unpleasant person, and he just had a very unpleasant experience on the way to Sachin. And then after Sachin, same guy, same restaurant, same waitress, and he just couldn't believe what a wonderful woman she was, how lovely she was, because he dropped off that. And when he discovered his own nature, his own true nature, he saw it in her too. That's the point of this practice, that once we're able to see that, to know that about ourselves, we see it in everyone, even grumpy waitresses. So that's why it's such an important practice. It's work. It takes some work to do. And it doesn't, it's kind of counterintuitive. We think that we're not going to get anything out of this because it looks like we're just taking on the troubles of the world. But it isn't like that at all. It's that we're recognizing the world for what it is, what it truly is, including especially this self that is experiencing at this point, on this path, at this moment. So you gave that back to her by being willing to listen. And sometimes that's all we can do, is to listen and just honor the pain that people endure, because they aren't willing to see or can't bear to break through that blinder kind of set of experience. But that greed, hatred, and delusion that are a part of this are the natural way that we experience everything. But they're each of them ways that can be transformed just by seeing what they are. And then and we ourselves are something else. And so is your neighbor.
I remember what I did afterwards. Called another friend. We talked about the situation.
That helps. It helps to have friends. So he said we can turn toward and appreciate our suffering, our problems, and those of others. That's the hard part, is turning in that way. Not to run away. Sonia?
I want to say something little about this. I don't know how to put it all together. My parents came to visit from Southern California. My dad is 93 and my mom is 85. And, you know, they're relatively in good health, but they really have slowed so much. I went to church with them this Saturday. They go to church on Saturday, and I was raised as a Christian, Seventh-day Adventist. So to make a big, long story short, they don't know I practice this because it would break their heart. So I took them to church on Saturday, and I grew up that way, and I love the hymns, and being in church with them and singing my favorite hymns that happened to just be, just was so precious to know, you know, this life is so short, they're going to be gone so soon.
Yeah.
And enjoying the whole service, being with them just simply as they are. And I so much wanted them to accept this, because it's having you here so lovely and so supportive, but it's, I don't think they would ever, but I don't know, but there's Buddhas everywhere in the house. And my mom asked me, so what is this thing? It's like I said, it's for whoever would like to enjoy it, because it's a beautiful big Buddha head, you know. And, well, what does it mean? I said, you know, to tell you the truth, I don't know, but I just think it's really beautiful, you know, it's a thing. So, she dropped that one because Bill was trying to teach me and bring me back. She tells everybody in church to call me so I can go back to church and go. I just don't want her to worry. And today, two of their really good friends came to visit them, and they've never been to our house. And there's a little teeny Zendo in the house, and they wanted to go see the whole house. And she passed by the Buddha, the other lady, and she asked me the same thing. What's this thing doing here? You know, kind of gave her a similar story. And I said, let's go inside. Let's get something to drink. So I'm running away from explaining what this is, because it's my practice, but I don't want to deal with it. And so we went down to the little Zendo. I was kind of trying to hide it so she goes through. And then she looks like, what's that? And, oh, it looks like a meditation place, is it? I said, I guess you can call it that way. I call it my church, where I'm quiet here. Because that's their lingo. You know?
Yeah.
But it looks like a meditation place. I said, you know what, you can call it, you know, if it is. Do you do that? I said, on a good day, I do. She goes, well, what do you really do? You know, it's kind of scary, isn't it?
Uh-huh.
I said, I used to think that, you know. And she said, what do you really do? And it's like putting me on my toes to say what it really is.
Mm-hmm.
And trying to say it in a way where she would understand it. And my mom is right there. And she is horrified of this whole thing. And I'm horrified, too, from hurting her feelings and having her worry about me, you know. And then I turned it to her. I said, well, what do you think it means? She goes, well, once I went through this whole surgery and my doctor told me that she was kind of critical, that she needs to calm herself down and take medication. He is Catholic and he believes in that, but it works for the whole thing, for them to just sit and be quiet and just let things, you know. She says, but I really didn't understand it. She said, I told him that I pray. I said, well, it's the same thing. She goes, no, he said, it's not the same thing. I said, well, it depends how you interpret it, you know. And she goes, well, what do you, you know, what do you really do? I said, well, you know, I just try to keep it simple. You know, there's so much going on in the head. You're so, you know, so busy. It's just trying to, you know, God work in certain ways, and he knows the best for us, so we have to kind of be there when he tells us what to do. And if we're really there listening, we can hear it, right? She goes, yeah, it's as simple as that. And she goes, and you know, I could see both her and my mom looking at me and trying to get it. And at the beginning, I just didn't want to say anything. I was running away from explaining. And I think at some points, even no matter how much we want to hide, because I resisted them judging Buddhists. They've always judged them like they're lost souls, they're doing weird stuff. And just saying it in a simple way. And then there's a cross, a real cross. And I said, well, isn't that beautiful? Oh, yeah, that's beautiful. And my mom said, oh, my friend would love this. I said, would you like to give it to her? My other friend, she says, no, keep it there. You need it. So I said, yes, you're right. I need it. Oh, I need everything. And so it was almost like a weight that came off just because this is the first time I talked to my mom about it. In an open way. And I tried to say, you know, the Buddhas really don't mean anything. To me, it's just a pretty thing. And in this Western world, they kind of imply tranquility and, you know, it's kind of like a furniture thing. It's more about being honest and being giving and then I took my parents to the airport and they seemed comfortable.
Yeah. I'm so glad you had a chance to do that. You handled that beautifully. It came right out of this book.
Well, the point that I was trying to make is we run away
from
facing sometimes and hurting people. And at some point, I could see her almost judging me. And I'm thinking, she just doesn't know.
Right.
Because she also saw a prayer wheel. It's like, oh, what is this? It scares me, you know. So when we don't know, it's scary. And not trying to hide, because I'm always trying to hide all these things, trying to protect people rather than meeting them where they are, or at least I think I did in a kind way.
I think you needed to do that.
Right.
I mean, there's no one way of doing this. It just depends on the situation. You were taking care of them until they were ready and the situation was ready for the whole thing came together finally, but it's taken a while for it all to be open in this way. And if it had happened before, it might have been a mistake. So you're free of hurting them now.
Hopefully they're not worried.
No, they're not worried, and they can see you. They can see what it's doing to you. You know, it's nothing bad is happening.
Right.
Well, on that note...
I have two short questions for you. Of course, they have to do with the slogans. You guys studied them once again, but I'm going to try anyhow. Slogan 60 says, in post-meditation, be a child of illusion. And slogan 4, self-liberate even the antidote. What is this antidote, and what does it mean by child of illusion? I read the explanations, and I understand the English, but
Well, in that one, that's early on in it, isn't it?
Four and six.
Well,
in other explanation, they say that the antidote is sunyata or emptiness.
Yes.
Oh, okay. But his explanation of child of illusion puzzles me. I'm not quite sure what he means. In Sufism, they say, you know, a Sufi is a child of the moment, and that's Atheism. Right here.
Well, I think that's what this means too. That if in meditation you're in emptiness, you could say, or you're experiencing that when you get off the cushion, you carry it with you. With that mind, that innocent mind, child mind.
What is the illusion?
Everything is an illusion. That's the absolute side of things. On the absolute side, everything is an inner experience that's constantly flowing through us, which can't be held on or kept in any way. It's all changing, and we're changing so that we surrender ourselves to, as we do in Zazen, we can, when we get up, also be surrendered in that way. And then the point about the I don't see the other one. Oh, self-liberate, even the antidote.
Yeah, I understand how the antidote stands for some matter.
Yeah.
I can get a hand on that.
Yeah, good.
Whether it's easy to be a child of addiction, does it mean you're confused or...
Oh, no.
All the time? No,
it just means being... innocent.
Childlike, you said last week?
Is that what I said last week?
No. That's, I think, what I understood. Yeah. Like having the children's pure...
Yes.
Innocent.
Yeah, without all the fancy ideas that go with it. You just give up all the ideas about it, the judgments about things, and just experience things as a child does. Plain and simple. Thank you. So the next one is transformation of bad circumstances into the path of enlightenment. So there are, this is the paramita of patience, which is very interesting. It's transforming all mishaps into the path of enlightenment. It is driving all blames into one. And I hope you all have a chance to read this chapter on driving all blames into one. That's probably one of the most important chapters in this whole book. And how this actually works in our life. It sounds terrible in a way, and it's really quite wonderful. And the one after it is to be grateful to everyone. So but I would say just do the first two, slogan 11 and slogan 12. 11 is very short, and 12 is longer, and as I say, it's really important. And bring that back next week and see how it is for you.